Daisy Miller, A Study by Henry James, narrated by Sharon Plummer. Part 1. At the little town of Vevey in Switzerland, there is a particularly comfortable hotel. There are indeed many hotels, for the entertainment of tourists is the business of the place, which, as many travellers will remember, is seated upon the edge of a remarkably blue lake, a lake that it behooves every tourist to visit. The shore of the lake presents an unbroken array of establishments of this order, of every category, from the grand hotel of the newest fashion, with a chalk-white front, 100 balconies and a dozen flags flying from its roof, to the little Swiss pension of an elder day, with its name inscribed in German-looking lettering upon a pink or yellow wall, and an awkward summer house in the angle of the garden. One of the hotels at Vevey, however, is famous, even classical, being distinguished from many of its upstart neighbours by an air both of luxury and of maturity. In this region, in the month of June, American travellers are extremely numerous. It may be said, indeed, that Vevey assumes at this period some of the characteristics of an American watering place. There are sights and sounds which evoke a vision, an echo of Newport and Saratoga. There is a flitting hither and thither of stylish young girls, a rustling of muslin flounces, a rattle of dance music in the morning hours, a sound of high-pitched voices at all times. You receive an impression of these things at the excellent inn of the Trois Couronnes, and are transported in fancy to the Ocean House or to the Congress Hall. But at the Trois Couronnes, it must be added that there are other features that are much at variance with these suggestions. Neat German waiters who look like secretaries of legation, Russian princesses sitting in the garden, little Polish boys walking about, held by the hand, with their governors, a view of the sunny crest of the Dent du Midi, and the picturesque tower of the castle of Chillon. I hardly know whether it was the analogies or the differences that were uppermost in the mind of a young American, who 2 or 3 years ago sat in the garden of the Trois Couronnes, looking about him rather idly at some of the graceful objects I have mentioned. It was a beautiful summer morning, and in whatever fashion the young American looked at things, they must have seemed to him charming. He had come from Geneva the day before by the little steamer to see his aunt, who was staying at the hotel, Geneva having been for a long time his place of residence. But his aunt had a headache. His aunt had almost always a headache. And now she was shut up in her room smelling camphor, so that he was at liberty to wander about. He was some 27 years of age. When his friends spoke of him, they usually said that he was at Geneva studying. When his enemies spoke of him, they said, but after all, he had no enemies. He was an extremely amiable fellow and universally liked. What I should say is simply that when certain persons spoke of him, they affirmed that the reason of his spending so much time at Geneva was that he was extremely devoted to a lady who lived there, a foreign lady, a person older than himself. Very few Americans indeed, I think none, had ever seen this lady, about whom there were some singular stories. But Winterbourne had an old attachment for the little metropolis of Calvinism. He had been put to school there as a boy, and he had afterward gone to college there, circumstances which had led to him forming a great many youthful friendships. Many of these he had kept, and they were a source of great satisfaction to him. After knocking at his aunt's door and learning that she was indisposed, he had taken a walk about the town, and then he had come in to his breakfast. He had now finished his breakfast, but he was drinking a small cup of coffee, which had been served to him on a little table in the garden by one of the waiters who looked like an attaché. At last, he finished his coffee and lit a cigarette. Presently, a small boy came walking along the path, an urchin of 9 or 10. The child, who was diminutive for his years, had an aged expression of countenance, a pale complexion and sharp little features. He was dressed in knickerbockers with red stockings, which displayed his poor little spindle shanks. He also wore a brilliant red cravat. He carried in his hand a long alpenstock, the sharp point of which he thrust into everything that he approached, the flower beds, the garden benches, the trains of the ladies' dresses. In front of Winterbourne, he paused, looking at him with a pair of bright, penetrating